Our passage opened with an encouragement to endure until the end. And then it finishes by fixing our eyes on the one who did endure until the end. I have a special job for our kids. So, Johnny, Carice, Lauren, would you guys come up here in the front? I need you guys to help me out. So just like right up here in this front section. Come on. Great. Johnny, do you want to join us? You can if you want to. You don't have to. Okay, so here's what's going to happen, you guys. I'm going to give you two situations, okay? I'm going to say one situation or another situation, and you're going to pick which one sounds more awesome. Okay? You guys got this? I believe in you. Okay, so would you rather receive back loved ones who have already died, like, soon, that's this side, or would you rather wait for a really, 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 really long time to receive them back, like, maybe 1,000 years from now? Which one? Would you rather receive back, so move this way if you like this one better, move this way if you like this one better. Okay, good one. Good answer, everybody. That's it. So would you rather conquer kingdoms? So like have victory, okay? Or would you rather be put in chains and go to prison? You guys aren't sure right here in the middle? You're this side? You guys want, okay. Would you rather, okay, everybody back in the middle. Okay, this way or this way? Would you rather escape the mouth of a lion and so be alive that way, or would you rather be cut in two? Escape the mouth of a lion or cut in two? That way? Nobody wants to be cut in two? No? Okay, back in the middle. Would you rather escape a raging fire, or would you rather be murdered with a sword? Man.
Give us the one that we actually have to.
Okay, you guys can all go back and sit with your parents. You guys, so shocking that you guys all picked the same side every time. I think our kids right there voiced all of our preferences, right? I don't know anybody who prefers any of that first or any of the second list. But the author of Hebrews sets side by side two groups of people. And in that first list, did you hear it? Through faith, they conquered kingdoms. Think about what inspires us. Think about our movies that draw us in. They conquered kingdoms. They brought about justice. They realized promises. They shut the mouths of lions. They put out raging fires. They escaped from the edge of the sword. They found strength in weakness, and they were mighty in war and routed foreign enemies. Like, this is like the victorious vision of the strong and the mighty. This tends to be our belief that, like, when God is on your side, these are the things that happen. We get victory, quench fires, we're saved from the enemy, from danger. Justice comes. So he gives us this list. But something in this list sort of haunts us. Right in the middle of it, he says, this group of people realized promises. But all through Hebrews, at the beginning of this passage and at the end of it, we're told that the people of faith, of something approaching perfect faith, never received promises. In fact, all of the people that were listed that we heard Jane reading about, person after person after person, never realized promises. And so something about this list in the middle, these people who are victorious and conquerors and justice bringers and all of this stuff, something is not quite right. And then we read the second list, others, a group that is not like the first, tortured and refused to be released so that they could gain a better resurrection. Better resurrection. This is the difference that John, the Gospel of John, makes between Lazarus's resurrection and Jesus's. Do we settle for Lazarus's to be raised only to die again, or do we long for a better resurrection, one that is final in an imperishable body forever? Others experienced public shame, being taunted and whipped. They were put in chains and in prison. They were stoned to death. They were cut in two. They died by being murdered with swords. They went around wearing the skins of sheep and goats, needy and oppressed and mistreated. This line beautifully captures who they are. The world didn't deserve them, because these were followers of Jesus who gave their lives as an act of love for others. And so, and verse 39, all of these people didn't receive what was promised. And so something is happening between these two groups. The letter to the Hebrews was written to a church that was growing apathetic, that was growing weary of doing good, that were at risk of not finishing the race. Listen to what the author writes a little bit earlier in chapter 5. He says, he's talking about Jesus, who suffered and gave his life for us as an act of love. And he says, we have a lot to say about this topic, and it's difficult to explain because you have been lazy and you haven't been listening. Although you should now be teachers, you need someone to teach you an introduction to the basics of God's message. You have come to the place where you need milk instead of solid food. Everyone who lives on milk is not used to the word of righteousness because they are our babies. But solid food is for the mature. The same word that's translated throughout Hebrews as the perfect, those who are being perfected. And here's how the author describes those who are mature in faith. They are those whose senses are trained by practice to distinguish between good and evil. So the author says, let's press on to maturity by moving on from the basics about Christ's word. And then he lists the basics. A foundation of turning away from dead works, so repentance, of faith in God, of teaching about ritual ways to wash with water, baptism, laying on of hands, the anointing of God's church, the resurrection from the dead, and eternal judgment. In his mind, these are the basics. We're going to press on if God allows it. So the author of Hebrews is writing to a church that's growing lazy and dull of hearing. They just keep repeating the same things. There is no movement toward perfection. Now, this is a word that messes with us deeply. But we are also people who are of the tradition that comes from John Wesley. John Wesley wrote a book called A Plain Account of Christian Perfection. In John Wesley's day, 300 years ago, people didn't like the word perfection, just as much as people don't like the word perfection today, because perfection has this sort of like arrival sense to it. But John Wesley was obsessed with the language of the scriptures, and the scriptures keep calling us to press on towards perfection, to press on towards Jesus who perfects us. John Wesley was obsessed with the language in the scriptures around perfect love. That we are loved perfectly by God, and that God is actually enabling us to perfectly respond in love to him and to others. The author of Hebrews is writing about this goal. Because the church has settled for so much less. Almost 20 years ago now, a book came out called Almost Christian, using John Wesley's language. And it was describing the faith of the average teenager in the United States. Biggest, most comprehensive study ever done on youth, their faith practices, their beliefs. And here's what the study revealed. You've heard me talk about this before, that the average Christian teenager in the United States is a moralistic, so obsessed with doing the right things, sin management, therapeutic, concerned with God making us feel good, deist. God is distant and out there, kind of like a genie, like shows up when we want to feel good, when we need some help, but ultimately distant. And this study reveals that this is the faith that our teenagers have 20 years ago. And the study suggested, and studies have been done since then that showed that they received this faith from somewhere, from a previous generation. And so now we're actually talking about generation after generation after generation of people who talk with around the Christian faith, but whose faith is maybe not even at the basics anymore. That we've somehow missed the heart. And so we just keep dabbling, settling for less than all that God is. And settling for less than all that God might do in us and through us. I think an example. When we run through these lists, our kids helped us, right, to name. They're a bit more bold than maybe we would be to say, these are the things I want. I want the easy way. Like, this is true of us and our desires shaped by our flesh. But something happens to us when our eyes are fixed on Jesus, when we pursue Jesus, when we experience Jesus pursuing us. Jesus perfects our faith, matures it, grows it, enables us to come to the place where we could live and spend our lives pursuing him, given over to him, and we could die and never see any of the signs of success, never conquer a kingdom, never experience justice done, never find ourselves feeling victorious. That the perfection of faith in us is that we might so profoundly identify with Jesus that we'd be willing to allow our lives to look like a complete failure, utterly worthless, because all we did was give it away in love. I think we live in a culture where it's really easy to pursue the promises, the things that sound great and that would satisfy us. At least they promise to. But the author of Hebrews is calling us again and again to lift our eyes beyond the promises, but to the one who makes the promises. It's only by fixing our eyes on him that we can ever hope to have faith perfected in us. And so we don't seek the promises, because when we do, we miss the perfecter of our faith. We miss the promise giver. But we seek the promise giver because when we seek him, he is always faithful to keep his promises. But his sense of timing is a bit different than ours. We come into this space week after week to fix our eyes where they need to be, to have our ears opened. As the author of Hebrews describes the dullness of their hearing, I'm reminded of the prophet Jeremiah, who says, your ears need to be dug out. Feels painful, but if your eye or your hand causes you to stumble, cut it off. If you need to have your ear dug out so you can hear God speaking to you today, would you let him do that work? I'm always reminded in moments like this, passages that talk about running the race, seeking Jesus, how easy it is for us to maybe rile each other up and get excited that we're gonna do this. And I always hear Peter, Jesus, I will be with you till the end. He says it right here at this meal. I'm with you, Jesus. I'm not going anywhere. God says to him, oh, Peter, you're so adorable. I love you. But you won't be with me by the end of the evening. And I'm reminded that it's Peter's failure that actually allows God in flesh to pursue him in his utter failure, to restore him and to perfect his faith. Isn't that amazing? That part of how God perfects our faith isn't through our successes. Part of how God perfects our faith is when we discover that he is there with us in the midst of our failures, and that his promises haven't failed, and that his love for us hasn't failed. And so declare boldly that you are with him. And then when you sin just as boldly, notice that he hasn't left you. And let his love perfect your faith.